Hey, this is JPEG DeRoss, show number 219, recorded on August 28th, 2018, our last show of August, your last chance to get in a few days into the August photo contest. Let's see, Tim, I do have something new with the September photo contest. I want to go over that real quick before we get into the show. Okay. We have a lot to discuss tonight, and I have some demo or hands-on to show later on. I was going to do a little bit of a pick of the week, something we've talked about before in the show. I've actually done a review of this product separately, but tonight we're going to do it as part of the show because not everybody is subscribed to the YouTube channel. Lots of the audience is not. But over on the jpegdeRoss/contest, jpegdeRoss.com/contest, is where you go to enter. You can enter the photo contest that we hold every month, either through the website or via our Facebook groups. The theme is listed right there underneath it, which is open and probably be open for the rest of the year. But starting in September, we're going to have a little bit different entry. So when you would go here, you'd click the little JPEG DeRoss photo contest. It'd come up with a form, which is still going to be the same. It'd have the little form, and then it would have a little place for you to upload the image. That was limited to 2 meg, so if your photo was over 2 meg, and we do encourage you to send JPEGs, not RAWs, for this contest. If it was over 2 meg, you would need to find a way to get it below 2 meg. But now JPEG DeRoss, we have our own cloud, Tim.
Oh boy!
And this isn't cloud in a cloud. This is I run the cloud myself. It's basically like a Dropbox, but for now on, whenever you click on the button to upload your photo for the contest, you'll come to a screen like this one, and you'll be able to up to 100 meg. So that should cover.
Wow, that should cover quite a few pictures.
That should cover any camera that's out today. JPEGs, JPEGs. Yeah. That's what we want you to send us. You don't really need to send us your full-size JPEG unless that's what you want to do. But you'll be able to just drag and drop it right here. It'll upload it, and I'll have it right away. So it's going to be for those. There were a few people that were struggling with the 2 meg limit. This will help them out. They won't have to deal with that anymore. So get your – whoops, that's the wrong button. Get your photos in before the end of the month, or just wait till September when we'll do it all over again. Right, Tim?
Absolutely.
All right, let's get right into this is the news right now in the photo world, right?
Well, for some people, yes.
I think it's the biggest news that's out there right now. Whether you're for it or against it, doesn't matter. It is the biggest news that Nikon finally announced. They'd done a lot of pre-announcing, but on August 23rd, they announced the new Nikon mirrorless cameras, the Z6, the Z7. That compete against pretty strongly against the Sonys in many areas. Mm-hmm. Looks like they tried to match them as much as they could, right?
I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, if we look over here at the general specs, I'll see if I can get this to pull up without it. The Z7, which is the both of these are full frame. The Z7, which is the bigger brother, 45 megapixels. 493 autofocus points, which really just covers the whole screen. 9 frames a second, weather sealed, and all that good stuff. That doesn't have this listed here, but 4K 30 frames a second video. Mm-hmm. For both of these. The Z6 24.5 megapixels, 273 autofocus points, 12 frames per second. Both of them, let's see, they're ISO 64 to 25,600 for the Z7, ISO 100 to 51,200 for the Z6. And I think I said the ISO on the Z7 wrong. It's 256,000, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
No, 25,600. I was right. Yeah, I was right.
Yes.
So, and they both have that 4K, 30 frames a second. One card slot. Do you remember, Tim, not too long ago, I was talking about the XQD card because I have a D500.
Yes. A couple months ago, right.
And I was talking about the XQD card and how it's difficult to find these now. Really, Sony is the only one that makes them. It was Lexar and Sony.
Lexar went out of business. Right?
And yeah, now it's now just Sony, and they're, you know, they're a little more difficult to find. I don't know why Nikon decided to stick with the with that thing. You know, I guess maybe they have an agreement with Sony that Sony will continue making these,
keep making it.
And that maybe the supply will come up when you have these two guys. But either way, it's one card slot, which is for some people an absolute deal breaker. I wouldn't say it's a deal breaker for me. I like having the two card slots. I've used them lots because I'll tell you one of the reasons I've used it. I've taken the XQD out, which is the one I want to use all the time. And I have multiple XQDs. I've taken the XQD out and stuck it in my reader and then gone back out to shoot and forgot, you know, shoot local.
Right.
Gone back out because I didn't bring my bag, just the camera and the lens. I'd gone out in the backyard around the house or something like that and started shooting. And when I got back, I go to take the XQD out and realize, oh, crap, I don't have the XQD in there. I just have the second card. That's really the main time I've used the second card in this camera. I've used it in another camera. But it's not necessarily a deal breaker. Obviously, if I didn't have the second card in there and I walked out of the house without the card, I would just walk back in the house with the card. And mm-hmm. if I'm going off or I'm taking the backpack and everything, I have a checklist of things I go through. I'm not going to forget to bring the card.
Right,
knock on wood.
I've done that before.
But for some professionals and some other people, you know, that may be an absolute deal breaker. No two cards. Now you've gotten us used to it in almost all of our Nikon cameras. Now that you've gotten used to it, you can't take it away.
I think that's a accurate assessment with some people.
So,
well, now this is going to require all new lenses, right?
It is, and I wanted to say something about that. So, you can shoot with your, you know, you can take your I have lots, not lots. I have a number of, you know, Nikon lenses that obviously don't fit the Z mount. They're all for the F mount, and I don't want to have to go out and buy a whole bunch of new ones.
I agree.
Right?
I think that's what's going to make people decide whether they want to switch brands or not.
And you can get a adapter, which they say, you know, is fully compatible with, I think, 95 different lenses. So my question is it compatible with one of the main ones I use for sports and sometimes for wildlife is my Sigma 120-300 2.8. That's mm-hmm. not a Nikon lens. And actually, it's not the newest version of the Sigma. So will that lens work? I don't know. But what do we tell a lot of beginners? The lens I have on this camera right now, it's a 50 millimeter 1.8.
Mm-hmm.
For Nikon, that's a $100 to $130 lens. For Canon, it's about the same thing. What is it for Sony? Do you know?
Probably about the same price, give or take.
So
yeah, Yeah. Unless you get the 1.4 or something.
Yeah, this is the 1.8. So the 1.4 right. or 1.2.
1.4 is much more expensive.
Yeah, 1.4, 1.2 is going to be much more expensive. The 1.8 is a great lens for a beginner. It is, you know, fairly cheap for the quality you're getting, right? So Nikon, that's one of the lenses that Nikon's releasing.
Now I got a question with that. The 50 was a very good lens on a full frame. If you got a crop sensor, shouldn't you be going with a 35?
And I do have a 35, and the 35 is a little more expensive than this. So I have a 35 1.8 also. The 50, okay, the 50 on here acts like a 75.
Right, and that's the problem for some people.
And yeah, that is a problem for some people, but it's still a good quality lens with a you know, shallow depth of field, and it's mm-hmm. it's a good lens. It's a good starter lens on even on a crop body. But I'm going to show you something. Here's the 50 millimeter 1.8 that Nikon's releasing for the Z mount.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that price. $600.
Yeah,
that's insane.
Yeah. You're not going to get somebody that's beginning to take pictures to buy this camera with that price.
Yeah. I would expect my 50 1.8 to be one of the cheaper lenses I could buy for my camera. It's one of those things I've always been able to count on, that a 50 1.8 is, you know, what they call it, the nifty 50,
there's
all kind of other phrases for it. It is a lens that is a beginner can get for a little bit amount of money. It's going to be better at depth of field, at least, and getting that shallow depth of field for your portraits and that kind of stuff than your kit lens that you're going to get with if you're buying a new camera. I tell a lot of people to go get it. If you're going to go get the mirrorless one, and now the 51.8 is $600, or you say, well, you don't have to buy this, Mike. You can get the adapter and the old 51.8. Well, you have to then buy the adapter, which is... I don't have that.
Probably 150, yeah.
Or more, yeah. So that's a little upsetting. I don't know why that's so expensive. You know, maybe there'll be more some reviews on it. They put an S on the end of it. What does S mean? I don't know. 51.8S. But let me ask you a question, Tim. For me, as a lot of the stuff I do some landscapes, which I'm thinking about the D850, but I do sports and wildlife. Mm-hmm. And my D500 for sports and wildlife is fantastic. I love it. Why would I go mirrorless?
You know, and the problem is, and it's not going to be you. I think that's going to be the question. I like my mirrorless. I went mirrorless probably about 7 years ago with the Sony when they had it. It was an SLR body. They called it the SLT, single lens translucent. No longer had a mirror on there. What I did like about it, and people complained initially, was the when I looked through the viewfinder, it was actually looking at a little video screen. So I liked the ability to see what I was going to shoot. Mm-hmm. It had all the information that you would have had on the back of the camera would show in the viewfinder. Since the camera had video recording capabilities as well, it would... Before that, when you had a SLR with video, it would not autofocus because the lens was up. It couldn't focus. With this one, since some of the light was coming through the translucent, it was allowing it to autofocus even while you were recording.
Yeah.
So there were some things to me that I liked about it. Granted, mine's, I think it's 6 years, 7 years old already, and I own a couple bodies, but... You look at the price of this. The Z6 is $2,000 for the body only. That's crazy.
I think, you know, price wise, they came really close to matching the Sony. So here's the Z7 versus the A7R3, and we'll scroll down to the bottom on price, and a little bit more for the Nikon 3397 versus 3198 for the Sony. They have this is photographylife.com. They have the settings side by side. Okay, so yeah, obviously I'm not everybody, and I may be out there by myself. I don't feel my D500 for sports and wildlife is holding me back. You know, if whatever's holding me back is me. So I don't need to run out and get the latest mirrorless. But let's, and maybe neither one of these is supposed to be a competitor to the. I thought I had. Yeah, here we go. Here's the other one, the Z6. Yeah. A competitor to the D500. You know, I don't know if they're either one of them supposed to be competitor to the D500. This one, the Nikon Z6, is about the same megapixels as the D500. It is full frame. Mm-hmm. It does shoot 12 frames a second, but let's talk about the 12 frames a second. Because mine here will shoot... at 9 or 10 frames a second for 200 frames, and I'm not going to do that. That's almost like video. 200 frames, and then
really.
And then if I let off the shutter for even a split second, it'll go another 200 frames until I have worn the battery or the card out, you know, filled it up. The buffer, I think the 200 buffer is just a way to keep it from like overheating maybe, or to calm things down. And that is in RAW. That is an uncompressed RAW, 14-bit. Mm-hmm. And it is auto-focusing. It is auto-exposure if you have that turned on. It is, you're getting very little blackout as you're doing it. It is able to do that. And now you say, well, Mike, why don't you shoot video if you're going 200 frames like that? I'm not generally doing it. What I'm doing is more burst, you know, 4 or 5, 6 burst, pause, and then the action may be immediate again, and brr, brr, you know, you're doing like that. You go around. So here's the thing with the Nikon one. Not so much with the Sony, but with the Nikon one. auto exposure and autofocus, I believe it's autofocus, maybe it's just auto exposure, is only up to 5.5 frames a second.
Ooh.
After that, the exposure is locked. So if you're shooting at 12 frames a second, the exposure is locked.
I wonder why.
Maybe they just can't handle that process. I don't know. On top of that, if you want 20 frames a second, so 12 frames a second, you're not getting auto exposure. You also can only shoot a 12-bit RAW. You can't shoot a 14-bit RAW. And I believe you're getting a lot more blackout where you can't see the scene progressing. And you got to be able to see the scene progressing. That's how I know when to stop the burst. Mm-hmm. If you're shooting soccer, you're shooting through the action.
Absolutely, because you want to miss it.
Shooting basketball, you're shooting through the action. And when the action's over, you stop and move to where you think the next action is going to be. If you're not able to see it, then how do you know when to stop? Except for maybe you keep your other eye open.
No, and you know that you just bring up a good point about the exposure also. If I'm shooting something in soccer and I'm panning with the shot, the exposure may be changing on me from shot. It's definitely going to be changing from shot to shot, depending on what's in the background, mm-hmm. If I'm shooting towards a goal. So I'm kind of surprised at that.
So it may sound like
I'm sure there's a reason, and maybe I'm don't know enough about it to speak intelligently.
It may sound like I'm upset. I'm not upset. I want Nikon to do well. We need, and I'm sure when Canon comes out, they'll be a strong competitor to Sony. I want the three brands and the others too.
Yeah, that's exactly.
To be strong competitors.
Pushes the other ones.
And I'm a Nikon fan, so I want the mirrorless to succeed. I think that for now, the DSLR side of Nikon will continue. We have both branches going on for a while. Somewhere down the road, it may be only mirrorless, and that's fine. I don't care. My next camera.
And I don't know. It seems like Chet is really into Sony out there, though.
Yeah, that's fine.
might convert you yet.
You won't. I do hope that I do hope that this does stop some of the bleeding for Nikon from people leaving to go to Sony purely because Sony had mirrorless. Some people may want mirrorless. So I'm going to give you an example. You gave some good reasons on why people want mirrorless. Theoretically, there's a lot of good things for it. I wish Nikon would have come out with 4K 60 frames a second or even mm-hmm. better. That seems kind of weak. I think my drone does better than that. Anyway, the lightweight, a lot of people say lightweight. And when I was traveling in Alaska in July, I thought the same thing. Man, I would love something lighter. And so, yeah, there is something to be said for something lighter. And this camera I got right here is a D500 without the grip on it.
Without the grip on it.
Without the grip on it. And it, because I'm so used to shooting it with the grip, right now it feels like it's just a tiny little guy. But it's still, I'm sure, heavier than your mirrorless one.
That's probably about the same. Because mine's about the same. The only thing is I don't have a top is that prism. That's the only difference.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Tim. What's your longest lens?
I have a 100-400.
Okay. I don't have the big guys, the 600 f4, the 500 f4,
the 400 f2.8. Nothing like that.
I have none of those. But I do have two. I have the 120 to 300 2.8, which is a heavy lens, and now the 200 to 500 f5.6 Nikon, which is about the same. Yeah, about the same size when it's at 200 millimeters, and then even bigger when it's at 500 millimeters. And it's a little bit heavier, I think, from the Canon, the Sigma. I went through every name there. So where I'm getting with that is the weight. When I put that lens on my, let's see if I can get it where you can see it. When I put that lens on here, on my Sidekick, or if I had a full Wimberly, what do you call it? What are these things called?
Which part?
A gimbal. Yeah, if I had a full gimbal here, when you put that lens there, what you're trying to do, I can't show it to you here, but you're putting a lens and you're trying to balance the lens so that the lens is in perfect balance. And when you put it up or you put it down, it stays exactly there. It's perfectly balanced. When I put that lens on this D500 without the grip, okay, Tim?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just responding in chat.
When I put that long lens, either one of those, on this without the grip, I've got to slide that lens way back on its foot. Okay. To where there is maybe a third of the foot still attached, and it's a little scary.
I was just going to say that makes you feel nervous then.
It does. So when I put that on, I always put the grip on to add some more weight so I can slide that thing in and get it either a half or maybe even more. And that's because this camera all by itself without the grip is not heavy enough to counter that
lens.
So
you're saying if you had an SLT lens or whatever, a mirrorless camera, that's going to be even lighter, which is going to make it even harder.
Yeah.
But if you have an adapter, you can use that lens, theoretically.
Theoretically. Right. If the day comes down the road that they come up with a 200 to 500 or 500 millimeter, something in that range that is lighter weight and that the camera does balance it well, then that's another story. But that's not available today for Nikon people. If you're a wildlife photographer or sports, you're probably not doing a tripod with the sport. But so let's stick with wildlife. If you're shooting wildlife and you're putting your camera on a gimbal and you have a long lens like that, you got to find some other way to balance that thing, because that lighter camera is not going to be enough.
Well, what did they used to do with tripods? They had the bag hook underneath it. So you hook a little hook underneath your camera and hang your camera bag from it.
Yeah. I don't know if I want that from there. That was more
that was really funny.
Yeah, that was more to the balance.
To stabilize. No, I know.
The tripod itself. All right, I'm going to give you another one. So for me,
that's a good one. I agree with you on that.
And obviously, I know Jordan and Gary and Jan are out there, and I know and Christina's out on Facebook, whether they use a gimbal at all, so it may not be an issue for them.
I don't use one.
Yeah, and on a tripod too sometimes. If you're just putting on a tripod, countering that weight. If you don't have a big lens like that, it may not be a problem, but countering that weight may be an issue for you. Another one, when I'm out shooting sports, this is sometimes wildlife, but mainly when I'm shooting sports, I might, depending on how long I'm out there, let's say when I was shooting swimming, I could shoot 1,500, 2,000 images in one meet. If it's school on school, when they would have five schools or six schools doing it and we're there for 8 hours, I might shoot, a lot more images than that. And yes, I bring an extra battery or two, with me, but I can get out of one battery with this camera, I can get, 1,000. If I push it and don't look at the LCD too often, I might be able to get 1,200 images out of it.
That's a lot. I don't think I'm anywhere. Now, is that with the grip or without the grip?
That's without the grip. With the grip, I can go even further.
I don't think I get anywhere near there. I'm sure I don't.
With the grip, I basically have two batteries in this camera. Okay. One in the grip and one in the body.
Both of mine go in the grip when I use my grip.
Okay. In this one, I've that may be different with different cameras. I think it was different
camera.
With this one, you actually end up having the battery in the body and the battery in the grip. So if you go back and look at the Nikon, and this one is the Z6, where's the battery? 310 shots.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
Yep, 310. The Sony that is comparable to rates for 610, which, 610 is...
It's double. I mean...
Yeah, it would be light for me.
It's double, half of you, double of your other, which means the Z7 is a quarter.
Yeah.
Now you're going to be forced to go out there and buy two or three extra batteries.
Yeah, that's...
That's $65 a pop.
I would blow through that and nothing flat.
Yeah. So you just increase the price of the camera to yourself.
Yeah. So those are reasons that it's not for me. I'm not upset with Nikon. I want to see the real images when it becomes released, and I hope it does well. I hope that they sell well, and Nikon continues down this, and we see the next generation come out, and we see more more lenses come out faster. They're only releasing three right now, but they have a roadmap for more to come out. Let's see.
I think the sad thing is that they came out with just the 6 and the 7, right?
Yeah.
So they came out with very expensive models and nothing for the beginner to purchase into this. And I mean, Sony, when they came out with it, they started with, was it the 6000 series or whatever? So they had some cheap, or the NXT series, I guess it was. I don't even remember what it was, but they had cheaper cameras so that you weren't going, nobody's going to go, no beginner's going to go out there and spend $2,000 plus a lens. Now you're talking $2,500, $3,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to go out there and spend that money. I can't imagine a beginner doing it.
Yeah.
I think that would be my only negative to what they did there.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting. You know, Canon's got to be right around the corner in how these stack up. I mean, it definitely did not leapfrog Sony. In a lot of ways, they matched Sony. In some ways, they fell behind Sony. So I don't know if I would say it's like first generation Sony, but it's just maybe not.
No, it's definitely beyond that. But
it's close to where the current Sonys are, just a little bit off in some areas. They released three lenses, the 50 I talked about earlier, a 35-1.8, and then a 24-70 f/4. In 2019, they have, what, 6 lenses coming, including the 70-200, and a knock lens, which is the 0.95.
What is that?
It's instead of f/2.8, it's f/0.95.
0.95,
yeah. Wow. I think that's going to be manual focus. In 2019, they'll get the what Nikon calls the Holy Trinity. They'll complete that match.
What year?
2019. So next year.
Oh, next year. That's not so far off.
Yeah. So there will be more lenses. We'll see what those prices are, because that 51.8 was outrageous on price.
No, I was just looking it up at B&H. I'm like, yeah. All three lenses they have out of there are like in that $600 to $700 range. I'm like, so now you're spending. All right. Granted, you're probably going to buy the camera with a lens. I think most people would probably do that. So you're talking $2,500 right up front.
Yeah.
And then if you need another one, and you're not going to want just a 50.
Yeah. I have been thinking for a while with my landscape photography of getting a D850, Nikon D850. And it is still hard to find. It goes out of stock all the time. You know, I don't know if it's because Nikon's just not making enough of them or because they're selling out because there's high demand. But nothing I saw with these two have changed my mind in doing that. And I just bought that 200 to 500. Nothing with this makes me regret buying it 200 to 500. You know, for now, this is the path still going to head down. And I'll wait and let other people buy these and try them out and find out what's right and wrong with them and, you know, keep going. But let's go ahead. We can go ahead and get off of Nikon. I think we covered the Nikon camera enough.
Well, I'll just say the last one. So more than likely, if I was to buy the Nikon one, you got with the 24-70 f/4 at 2600. That's probably the one most people would buy, I would think. Or even they have the camera with the 24-70 and the mount adapter kit for 2700. That's probably what most people would buy, I would think.
Yeah.
Because then you can use your lenses and you got one of a native lens to it. I don't think most people would buy that 50. I'd be surprised at least.
Yeah. And here, I'll show this shot. This is the Verge had a good shot here with the three lenses, the Z7. When you look at it there in the hand, it looks kind of large there. But in this next image, it looks super tiny.
Oh, my God. Now, is that a guy's hand versus a girl's hand between the two?
It does look like
there,
a guy's hand.
There it looks tiny.
And that one has the adapter on it. I'm not familiar with these kind of adapters, but that big chunk at the bottom of the adapter, to me, looks kind of odd. Maybe that's normal for
those. Yeah, I think that Sony has the same thing for some reason.
What is the chunk for?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know.
You know, it looks, I think it's probably about as thin as a Sony.
Yeah, probably about that.
They made the hand grip nice and deep, like I like the Nikon ones. It does have a top readout. LCD. Yep. And no flash, but it has the hot shift.
It does have a dial on there, which is nice. Mm-hmm.
Not quite sure what this dial is right there.
Well, could that be for f-stop adjustment?
Yeah, probably so.
Because I have the dial on the front. And is there one also on the front for a shutter speed then? Go to the other. Go up a little higher to the next.
That's the wrong side. Here. It looks like it's just that one.
Mine is underneath the shutter.
Yeah, mine is too.
Under her index. So you might be hiding behind her index finger.
Yeah, it's hard to see there. I can't tell if it is or not.
I mean, that would make sense. You got the f-stop and aperture and shutter.
Tripod mount? Oh, is that what that is? The bottom of the where's that at? Let's go back to that. Jordan is saying, are you saying
that? I can't imagine that. That would be stupid because you have a tripod mounted just behind it on the camera itself.
Do you have one of you? Do you have a Metabones for your Sony?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, go get it. Let's see if there's a tripod mounted at the bottom of it.
Where's the adapter? I saw the adapter. If I go into maybe show pictures of the adapter.
I don't think it looks bad. I think it looks fine.
Yeah, I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah. All right. Jordan says that's what's on his, is a tripod mount.
Really?
So that would be, I guess, why they would have that little block at the bottom.
That looks so weird then.
Yeah. All right, Tim, you thought those...
Well, I guess in a way it makes sense. You know what? It actually makes sense because the frame may not be able to support the lens on the body on a tripod. The weight shift between the two.
Oh.
So you're shifting the weight from the camera body from the attachment to that part.
But with
because the camera's light.
With bigger lenses, they're going to have a foot, and the foot's what you're going to put on the tripod.
Yeah, but how many of those? Only one. My 7200 is the only one that has a foot on it.
So you're saying like if I put an 85 on there.
It might put too much stress on the camera body.
Hmm. All right.
That's my guess. If that's what they have it for.
Oh, yeah, I guess they've tested it and they know what to do.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So let's go to something a little less expensive, Tim.
Okay.
That is the $1 billion telescope that's going to take photos. That's going to take photos 10 times sharper than Hubble. Now, I don't know, when did Hubble launch? That seems like it was a long time ago.
You know what? I was just down at the Kennedy Space Center. You'd think I would remember because I read it, and it's got to be 20 years ago.
And the Hubble was incredible. I remember when they were launching that, it's like, that is so awesome that they're putting this thing out there. But now,
if you remember, it was blind because they messed up.
Yeah,
the measurements.
They fixed it, and this is
April 1990.
And that was when they 1990. Wow, that's 2 years after I graduated college. they put that one up in space, right?
Yeah.
This one is an Earthbound telescope. It's going to be 10 times sharper than the Hubble, which was up in space. And I think where is it at? It's down South America somewhere, Chile. It's down in Chile. It's going to be on a mountain.
Right, where it's away from light.
Yeah.
Pollution.
A little bit higher up, yep. And they chose this position because it has over 300 clear nights a year. Which is
300?
300
clear. That's a lot.
Yeah, 300 clear nights in the year. They show some examples.
Well, for $1 billion, you better be looking for that.
it has, let's see, 7 separate 20-ton mirrors. It has that are 27 feet each. And then they show an example here of them working on one of the mirrors. And I wish you could blow this photo up, but to look at what's actually happening, because when I first look at it, I go, that doesn't look smooth. That's a whole bunch of chunks. And it you ever done cement where you get the 2x4 or whatever, and then you smooth it out?
Screeding it.
That looks like these guys are about ready to do, doesn't it? It looks like these guys are about to take that thing that they're leaning against and go around the circle and make it a smooth surface. But that's not what they're doing. But I guess they put all these chunks in here when they're getting it ready. And here's another shot of chunks of glass where they're getting ready to make this thing. And I think this is a shot of the back. You get a size, a scale there.
It's amazing when you think about the tolerances that it has to have. And at its size, it is just amazing.
Well, look at that. Look at the guy compared to the thing. It's standing up there. Is that insane? And then here's the back where I guess they have all these bolts holding it together.
Right. to keep it in alignment.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I can't wait to see the photos coming from this thing. 10 times sharper than Hubble is going to get it. Let us be able to see things we've never been able to see before. Just incredible. Tim?
And I'm surprised. And that's from down here. I'm surprised. Because I also, that was the issue. And that's why they sent Hubble up, is to get beyond the atmosphere, right, and the bending of the light and the light pollution. And that's why Hubble, I mean, the images that came out of Hubble are just amazing. So,
yeah. No, they are. Things we, you know, they saw new things that we'd not been able to see before.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Did you have, you want to talk about either one of yours? Or?
No, I'm not really. Neither of them are really great articles. So, you know, there was and we didn't ask about this. There was another announcement on the 23rd. Did it overshadow Nikon?
I didn't hear anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
DJI announced two new Mavic Pros on the 23rd.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So that didn't overshadow, at least not in your eyes, I guess.
No, it didn't overshadow, but the new Mavic, was announced.
You know what I didn't know? I knew it had the Hasselblad lenses, but what I didn't know was several years ago, they bought a 30% stake in it. And then about a year or two ago, they pretty much bought out a majority stake in it. So they pretty much own it. So it brought down their lenses into reality prices.
Yeah.
And I was reading a review about it this afternoon. They said the pictures, the color reproductions are absolutely, it's a huge step up from the Pro that you have, which is only a year old.
Yeah, I have the Mavic Pro, yeah. Yeah, mine's still running good. Yeah, Gary says it takes a whole bottle of Windex to clean that.
Yes, I'm pretty sure they don't use Windex.
Yeah. I don't know. I have to see, you know, mine's still running great. I love, you know, flying a drone is addictive. It's so much fun, but I'm going to wait and see. There's so many things vying for your money, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to sell my Phantom 3. I'm going to sell that. And I think I'm going to get an Air.
Okay. Yeah.
Cause I saw my friend's son has one. It's like, oh my God, you can carry this thing everywhere. It is just amazing.
Yeah.
It was like, I think I'll buy one on eBay again and save a little bit of money.
That's good. But, you know, there's so many things vying for your money. There's lenses I'd like to have. I'd like to have the D850 I've talked about. Doing this show.
It's not free.
No, but it produces, we create about 100 gig worth of files every show. Isn't that insane?
Yes.
And some of it is because I'm double recording and the bitrate I'm recording at. So it could be less, but that is what's happening. So that eats up a lot of storage.
Shows is a terabyte, and hard drives have not come down that much.
I have to keep adding hard drives. We're up to 56. My server's up to 56 terabyte right now. It's not it's not full, but it's, I think it's 61% full.
Yeah, it goes fast.
It does. But I wanted to show you. So let's move on to the next subject. And I want to show you, Tim, something that I talked about in the past, but now I have an example. Actually, this one and the next thing I've talked about on previous shows, but now I can show you an example. The first one, remember me talking about if you got a bird feeder in your backyard.
Right, yes.
You can set up this stick and you can use the birds will land on the stick before, some of them will land on a stick before going to your feeder, or land on it while they're waiting for other birds to move away from the feeder, or after they went to the feeder. You can use that as a staging area. And if you set it up right, you can use it as a staging area and take photos of the birds who really are only there because your feeder's a foot away from them, but you can isolate them and make it look like they're there all by themselves.
I saw a picture and I loved it.
AD says no notifications at all. That could be my fault, AD, as I was trying to fix. So AD is late because the YouTube didn't send a notification, but AD pointed out in the past that the notification that was being sent out just said J.P. Draw is live and had no link to where to go.
Right.
So it could be that when I tried to fix it, I broke it even further. So let's right now blame it on Mike, and I will look into that. So good information to know. Something just fell behind me. All right, so I'm going to show you an example of what I was talking about, Tim, and the setup and then the after, okay?
Yes.
So here's the setup taken with my cell phone. I'm standing on my deck. I've got, you know, my lens right there on that gimbal I showed you before. Mm-hmm. And you can see the feeder. Can you see the stick?
Yeah, coming from the left. Out of the side. Looks like it's coming out of the side of the tree, but I assume that's
You got to get something with a little bit of heft so that it won't bounce too much when the birds land on it. But at first one I put up had too many leaves on it, and the birds were covered up with the leaves. So this one is a dead branch that's stuck there. It's a little bit of heft. So even the squirrels, when they get on it, they don't knock it over. And they do climb up that. The one challenge with
trying to get to a bird feeder, I'm sure.
The one challenge with this, and I'll show you in some of the images, is that that white kind of building you see back behind there is a school. And depending on the type of day, it is blazing white. So sometimes when that is in your background, it's kind of distracting. So I've got to find the right angle to not get that in the background. So let's look at one of the images here. So here is an example of taking that shot, a shot. You can see a tree in the background, some of the light. This is the bird who landed on that tree branch
that you placed there.
Yeah.
So it's not on the bird feeder.
Yeah. So like on the bird feeder, you'd get this.
Right.
And I didn't worry about framing this or anything. This is just an example. So AD can hold back to critiques. This is an example of a cardinal who landed on there. And hey, you can get some great bird shots of birds doing some, you know, cute things sitting on your feeder. But, you know, getting it in this, you kind of almost think it's in a natural environment.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you were out in the backcountry and waiting for a bird and you found it up there.
Yeah.
Like that one.
Like that one. And these, I believe these are uncropped, if I remember right.
I like the cropping on that one.
Yeah, just the bird landed there, and I can set up and just wait for the bird to land there and do that.
It's very easy to move on the gimbal, your camera then?
Oh yeah, super easy to move on that. And if I got in a different angle, I probably could shoot with the ground being more of the background versus so much of this light. Because as you see from this bluebird shot here, I'm picking up some of that. You know,
the windows.
It's not the windows. I think the building itself is white. And from the angle that we are, we're above them. So you can kind of see some of the roof, which is white too. So I'm picking up some of that, some of the building and the roof.
And so what f-stop is this? Is this f4 then on that camera?
The f5, 6 is as wide open as it goes.
F6.
Yeah. F5, 6.
That's still great background. I mean,
yeah.
So you would never know it's a building behind it.
No, but obviously all those white dots distract from the bluebird.
Yes.
So if I got a different angle, you could definitely isolate that and have what looks like a wooded forest background. Mm-hmm. And all it is the bird is right next to my feeder. He's about to jump down to the feeder.
Right. Staging areas, put it.
Yeah. So you can create these around your feeders or different areas, and they will go to it. They land on it all the time. It's a natural thing to them.
Yeah. Now, where did you find that idea?
I saw a YouTube video somewhere about it a while back and thought, let me try that.
Now, I'm assuming you kept that stick. Is it kind of semi-permanently mounted in the area?
The stick is really just leaning against another – you can't hardly see it here, and I don't think I can zoom in. It's leaning against another pole.
Okay.
And it's heavy enough at the bottom that it hasn't moved. Even with the squirrels going up, it hasn't fallen over. If it falls over, I'll go back out there and put it up again.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's worked out well. It's fun to go out there and just shoot the birds with a camera.
I knew you were going to say that.
All right. So let's go to the last thing. So this is I'm going to start trying to have, not every week, some weeks have a pick of the week.
Okay.
And this pick of the week is something that I've talked about in the past, and I finally got it. And that is the Universal.
Oh, you got it.
Lens cap. Universal lens cap from curvedcamera.com, curvedcamera.com. And I have done a separate review on this. So I know AD's already seen it. If you've already seen it, then I'm just going to do the same thing over again. It's going to be boring. If you haven't seen it, if you subscribe to the show through all the different ways you can subscribe to it, you know, iTunes and those kind of places, you may not have seen this. So I'm going to show it to you. I got it. Here's the little case it comes in. And let's go to this shot so you can see it. And I'm going to put it on. Let's get three lenses here. Let me move this out of the way. I'm going to put it on these three lenses, starting with a 50-1.8, an 85-1.8, and a Tokina 12-24. And I chose this one because it's a 77 millimeter, just like my 70-28. Okay? Mm-hmm. But let's take this off. Okay? So in comes in here, and it has... let's see. There you go.
Hello. Thank you for getting yourself a universal lens cap.
And it has a few things here on telling you what to do. There's four of them front and back with some little instructions and where you can go online for whatever, customer service, that kind of stuff. And then there it is. It's in this little thing, and it's rubber. So you just stick your finger in here and pull it out.
Okay.
Real easy. And it's, you know, it's nice and rubbery. And
how thick is it?
Maybe
eighth of an inch, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. It's not super thick. So let's try it on the 50 millimeter first. And on the 50, I don't have to hardly do anything. I can just put that guy on there, and I only have one. So you could have replaced this, right, the back thing, and put two on there. But I only have one. Now they show you kind of tossing it around. It's not that much cushion. I'm not going to toss it around, not even on here, because it's not going to protect the insides that much. Right. And then to take it off, you just, you know, do that. And I could take this off. You don't have to leave the lens cap on.
Right, you don't need that anymore.
So you could
now
just,
what's on the inside? Is there anything like felt or anything to prevent scratches, or it's just the rubber?
It's just rubber on the inside.
Okay.
So that fit fairly easy. So let's take the lens cap off the 85. To go on 85, though, I can't just slide it on there. It's going to take two hands, and I'm going to put it down. And to tell you the truth, when you put this on your camera, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
But so it fits on there pretty good. Taking it off is real easy. Putting it on the back would probably be pretty easy. So, but when I put this on, one hand. When I put this on,
two hands. But now you can throw it across the room.
I would not throw it across the room, but it does feel pretty snug on there. And if I had another one, I mean, that would feel like it gives a little bit of extra protection.
Yeah.
Gary's saying I could place a backdrop behind that.
Behind the photo stick for the birds. Right.
Yeah. So, okay, there you go. So that's, on the 85, it's almost perfect. And now keep in mind, they only sell one size. And on their ad on their website, they show it on a 70 to 200. Okay? A Canon, I think it was a Canon 70-200. So let's take this off. This is the same. Yeah, I think that's 77 millimeters, 77 or 72. I should have brought the, I think it's 72 millimeters. 77 millimeters. Okay. You ready, Tim?
Yep.
So with this one,
you're struggling.
It is a little more of a stretch. It does seem a little bit easier than the first time I did it, but it's a little bit more of a stretch. It definitely takes two hands. And it does look, you know, pretty cool on there. And of course, taking it off is one hand.
But you can see the front of it. It doesn't match up with the size of it when it's on there. It shows the front of it is definitely being stretched out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a perfect fit on there, but it does quite good. But what I would say here is, especially with my 70-200, I always have the lens hood on that thing. Mm-hmm. And when I've got it in the camera bag and I'm traveling with it, I have it in the storage mode like this. Mm-hmm. Right? So that means that I'm not going to walk around like they showed that guy on, they showed in their ad without the lens hood. I mean, have it in storage
with the
mode.
With the lens hood, you're not getting that on there.
Yeah, so now let's try it with the lens hood on it, which is how I would store this. Because if I don't. Because
what are you, you're not going to have it separate, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to have you're this separate. It. Or I guess maybe I can put it like that. I don't know.
No, I couldn't even get mine on that way because I have foot on it.
Yeah, that's true. For this lens, I probably could get away with it that way. For my 70-200, I couldn't. So now, hold on. So I got it on there, but it's not very good.
Yeah, that looks useless.
Yeah.
That looks like it's going to come flying off at some point.
It I tell you, it is.
It once looks it's pretty on, tight on there.
Once it's on there, it is really good on there. But with a lens that has a lens hood like this one or my 70-200, I just can't see using it. So for me, because it is so easy just to put that on with one hand.
To me, it looks like a solution looking for a problem that wasn't there.
Yeah. So while this is my pick of the week, it is not a pick of the week that I'm saying I'm going to be buying it.
You know, maybe
for some people, you know, when this 80, I put it on my camera. Here, let's do it. I'm going to put it on the camera. I think it looks kind of cool. In case these guys ever watch this and think I'm not giving it justice, we'll do.
Take off the lens cap, though.
Well, but once I put it on, you can't see the lens cap. I mean, that looks pretty awesome.
See, I think where that is good is if you have it on, let's say your black wrap strap, and you're carrying it on the side of you, and it hits something, that's going to give it some cushion.
It might give it some protection.
That's where I think it's good.
So what you're saying is I shouldn't toss this down the stairs right now.
No, because your camera's still exposed.
Oh.
You got to get one of those for the camera.
So if I had one of these for the cameras, I can just toss it down the stairs.
You can do it yours.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That is the covered camera universal. Universal.
Now, how much was that?
It's only $25. So, you know, only. But I don't know how much. How much is a lens cap replacement?
You know what? They're not cheap.
Yeah. So this may $24 may not be outrageous. I would not throw away the lens cap.
No, I know I've lost or misplaced them, and I wind up buying some, and I'm like, oh my god! And forget, God forbid you lose the on your the hood. These are like $100 for the damn hood on a 70-200.
Let's go back to us. Yeah, so if you do get this guy, don't throw away your lens caps. You may need them later. But if you
sell them on eBay, make your money back.
If you were to get one of these, you know, curved cameras, universal lens cap for both the front and rear lens cap for all your lenses, that'd be pretty expensive.
But I think it would be great for storage.
What do you mean? In your bag?
Yeah, maybe in your bag. And then maybe at the same time, I would probably throw in one of those little silicone, not silicone, those, you know, for moisture.
Yeah. Well, to try and give it the benefit of the doubt, I will say that, you know, my camera bags are usually it looks pretty comfy in there. I mean, it has lots of padding and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But there are times where I might take two lenses and stack them on top of each other, especially these smaller ones. Mm-hmm. And stack them on top of each other, that would provide some protection. Right. But I've done that a bunch, and I've not damaged any yet. So
because you keep your lens caps on.
I do keep my lens caps on.
Yeah.
There are people. I was talking to Don Kamarachka the other day. He doesn't keep either the front or the back on at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I cannot imagine storing my lens without the rear one on, especially.
Yeah.
I could see keeping the front one off maybe here or there, but the back one, I take a lens off, and immediately it goes right on there as the lens is going on the camera.
Yeah, me too. I guess I almost feel like once I take that lens off the camera, that there's a clock ticking. How fast?
Yes.
How fast can I get either the body cap back on or a lens on, and then the cap back on the lens?
The other lens. Absolutely. I think the same way.
Hurry up.
Like something's going to have, the sun's rays are going to melt it.
And then here's Don, who's just leaving his, you know, no caps anywhere.
Yeah, no, not me.
Well, that was my pick of the week. I have another one next time we have a show. I'll talk about for next time that I do like. So this one, I don't hate this thing. It's just for $25.
All right, let's put it this way. How many lenses do you own?
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. 12.
12 lenses times 2 is 24. Yeah. Times 25. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
But you know, the 70 to 200, which is 77 millimeters, you saw how horrible that thing fit on here.
Yeah, and then with the lens cap,
with the lens hood, even worse. I have two lenses that are bigger than that.
Yeah. Oh, that, yeah, forget about it. What do you have, an 82 millimeter?
No, one of them is, I think, a 105.
Wow. Yeah. No, it's not designed for that.
And there, I did read somewhere that they may be coming out with some more sizes. So maybe that will help those. But for me, it's the problem of, you know, here you go. One hand.
It's so easy.
Versus two.
Right. And this spring loaded now. So it really goes on easy.
Look at that. I still have a filter on this one. I've been stopping using filters lately.
I have it on my 1650. That's about it.
That was the last thing I had, Tim. Let's talk about if you are listening to us on, if you're watching and on YouTube, you definitely should be subscribed. So once I get the little thing fixed to get sent out notifications properly, you will get notified. Tonight, apparently that did not work, but I will get that fixed. And then you'll be notified when we go live. We generally stream live Tuesday nights on YouTube and on Facebook. But if you can't make it live, we are out there on iTunes. And it looks like I have this fixed now. Remember the last two times it wasn't fixed. We're out there on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Podbean for audio. And on video, we're on iTunes, video large and small. We're on YouTube, Vimeo, and Podbean. And you can see all these links and all these options on jpedderaw.com/subscribe. Go out there and subscribe to one of those places or to YouTube or whatever. Yep. So until next show, keep it raw. Good night, everybody.
Good night.